How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvers and Dave Meltzer here on Wrestling Observer Radio. It is July 24th, 2012. You're at figure4online.com/wrestlingobserver.com. We are here talking the 1,000th episode of Raw. And as expected, a very newsworthy show.
Episodes of Raw tonight.
What was that?
I feel like I watched 1,000 episodes of Raw tonight.
I thought it went by awfully easily.
Yeah, well, I guess so. I guess it did. I don't know. I thought it was, it was really newsworthy. The first hour was kind of tough, but I think that, in the end, you can see, that it looks like Rock and John Cena are probably going to headline WrestleMania. Rock's probably going to beat CM Punk for the title at the Royal Rumble. And I guess that leaves Brock Lesnar with Undertaker, and I think we got, the next several months, as far as the big picture, it looks like they got a direction, and hopefully they go with that direction. It's not a bad direction.
I don't think, by the way, this is going to be the last first hour of Raw that's going to be tough to get through.
Yeah. The one thing is they didn't do anything at all. The whole thing that they've been talking about is we're going to do all these things in the first hour that the fans will vote on that will lead to what happens in the third hour. And they actually did nothing of the sort. There was a poll, but it was, I think the only poll was who do you want to see?
It was the AJ
wrestle at the Royal Rumble, and it doesn't really matter because it's not like it was binding or anything. It had nothing to do with matches or anything.
Well, they had the AJ Twitter poll too.
Yeah, but that wasn't binding either.
No.
It wasn't like, okay, if you vote, she'll get married or she won't get married. It was just like a poll.
Well, I was under the impression that stuff was going to be starting next week and down the line because they didn't need it this week. They had so much stuff this week.
Yeah, maybe that will start next week. But, we got our tout stuff and,
the quality has plummeted.
It's not terrible, but it's an absolute waste of time, too.
Yeah. Well, let's get into this because we got a lot of stuff to talk about. So here we go. It opened up with a brand new video. It was a hell of a video. They always do these great videos, but I could not help but watch it and think. It's funny to look back and see so many great moments and also moments which were actually quite horrible. But when you see them put in a video like this, you realize that they actually thought these were great moments as well. I don't know. I thought it was kind of funny. Nothing really popped out, but...
There was some, there've been some amazing stuff on that.
Oh yeah, there were some great moments in this video.
You have 1,000 episodes of a TV show. You better have enough to fill a 3-minute video with amazing stuff.
Well, sure, but at the same time, you had Big Show and Pee Wee Herman dancing together,
which was actually terrible.
When Big Show writes a book someday, he's not going to be saying, "Man, that was one of the great moments of my career." He's going to be appalled. And here they were putting it in this was one of the best moments in 1,000 episodes of Raw. And I thought, man, someone didn't go through the entire archives, obviously, because there's got to be better stuff than that. But anyway, I thought the video was great. And they always do a good job with the music videos. So it opened up with Vince coming out. And he thanked the fans for the 1,000 episodes. And the fans thanked him and that sort of thing. He said, "Welcome to Monday Night Raw," as he'll always do. And then he called out DX. And that was, in fact, the end of Vince McMahon on this year's show. So Triple H and Shawn came out, and they did their thing. They called out X-Pac, Billy Gunn, and Road Dogg, who all were there, came out in their Jeep. Same Jeep supposedly the same Jeep that they invaded WCW in. And to make a very long story short, they dicked around for about 10 minutes, and then Damian Sandow came out, and he made fun of the group for being miscreants, and obviously it ended with them beating him up, laying him out, hitting their super kick.
They were common degenerates whose sophomoric and disgusting behavior has plagued humanity and brainwashed the masses into doing crass conduct. That's what Damian Sandow said.
He wrote that whole thing down.
Yeah, I thought it was a great line. If they're going to spend time teaching this guy to memorize lines like that, I'm going to write them down.
Well, that's good. Yeah. Historically accurate.
And Sean said that, in fact, that's true, and he needs to go to church and ask for forgiveness once again. Is that what they do? I don't mind.
Dave, anyway. You tell me you haven't been to church lately?
What?
You haven't been to church lately?
No, I have not been to church lately.
Well...
But Sandow told him that, in fact, they could eviscerate him like common trash, but then he will not be a victim. He will be a martyr. So they got in a huddle, and they decided they were going to make him, in fact, a martyr and super kick in a pedigree, and they eviscerated him like common trash.
Yes, they did. And yes, then, they did.
And then that was the end of the segment. And they did, in fact, say suck it a couple times, but they did not say badass Billy Gunn. They said bads, and then they, I think Road Dogg goes, the bad bleep Billy Gunn, which
yep.
I thought was quite unique.
Yeah, it wasn't a terrible segment or anything. I just felt like it went way too long. And
I wouldn't even say, look, it was when I was watching it, I thought it was exactly what it should have been. You know, it was like, it did go long, but you know, I mean, they were looking to drag it out.
Well, they did a good job.
Yeah. But I mean, I thought, like, again, when it was over, it was like, it was what it should have been. You know, it wasn't like it was great. It was just a collection of those guys just doing what they were doing. But it's what the people wanted to see. Because this is a nostalgia show. So they gave you all the ring entrances, which is what they do. And, you know, I mean, I guess they could have let, you know, Sean Waltman and Road Dogg and Billy Gunn do their finishers. But nobody remembers them anyway. So they just did the two that everyone remembers. And that was that.
First match was Sheamus, Sin Cara, and Rey Mysterio. Yes, Rey and Sin Cara teaming together here. I believe for the first time ever on television. I could be wrong.
I don't remember.
I don't remember them ever teaming up before, but they didn't make a big deal out of it, so maybe they don't know or don't care. Anyway, they faced Alberto Del Rio, Dolph Ziggler, and Chris Jericho, and it was immediately obvious, and it continued throughout the show, that these fans, some of whom apparently paid, according to an article today, as much as $1,000 for a ticket to this show.
Is that what scalpers were getting for this thing?
Apparently. There was that article today about WWE ticket prices for this show, and I don't remember the exact numbers. Like $1,068 was the top price for a ticket for this show.
Wow.
These people did not pay for pro wrestling matches.
No. They were coming to see a nostalgia show.
Yeah. They sat on their hands here.
And they gave them short matches, for the most part. This was, you know, I mean, here you had some of your best workers in the company, and you went 4 minutes.
4 minute match, and Sheamus pinned Jericho with the brogue kick, and as I was talking about yesterday, booking the dude exactly like Triple H, and he's getting over, shockingly. So, fans.
Well, also, Jericho was set up when Ziggler turned on him and punched him. So, obviously they're going with Ziggler and Jericho, I think, at SummerSlam. Or, you know, if not, I mean, that's the next program, so. That's how they kind of did it. So it's the continuation of the Jericho babyface turn.
Well, there you go. So it's fine for 4 minutes.
Yeah. The first tout segment, which was next, I have it written down in my notes that this was an embarrassment.
Yeah, it was bad.
Yeah.
It was bad. We're going to have some bad ones, unfortunately.
Yeah.
The first week I had hope because the ones they put on the air were not too bad and they were quick. And this week I think we had a total of about 8. And only a couple of them were not an embarrassment. So
yeah, I mean it was. I mean, I thought realistically that 75% of them were TNA level.
Oh yeah, yes.
You know, and to me, TNA level should not means you know. I mean, the same thing with TNA does it. I always think this shouldn't even be on television. That's what I was thinking here. It's like this stuff should not be on TV because it just makes your fans look like complete. You know. It's like. You already got a stigma about with advertisers, and you know what I mean. Don't confirm people's worst beliefs of your fan base, and that's what they're doing. That's what they did tonight.
Then we had Charlie Sheen on Skype. Since he's quit Twitter, he actually sat down and. Either watched the show or he had some pretty good notes and drank the rest of the time. But he commented 3 times during the show. We'll talk about all of them as they come along because it plays into the show here. But he didn't have much to say this time. But it was mind-boggling to see Charlie Sheen talking about what he'd been watching on Raw. That's what happened.
Yeah.
We had Layla backstage.
I mean, at that point, it's okay. I don't know. I almost thought that, like, if Charlie Sheen's going to be there, he should have come.
Oh, let's not be ridiculous, Dave. So we had AJ backstage with Layla, and they were talking about whether or not AJ was mentally ill, and AJ's defense was, look around, everyone here is nuts. And they opened the door, and we had Doug in, and Piper and R-Truth jumping rope with little Jimmy, and Mae Young walked up, and she had a man in a hand suit that she claimed was her grown-up hand from when she gave birth to a hand in the 90s after being impregnated by Mark Henry.
God, was that stupid.
What, the original angle or this?
Both. I saw that, and it was just like, that was just so freaking stupid.
She was standing there with a man in a hand costume.
I mean,
how can you not enjoy that?
I just thought it was like just the stupidest thing in the world.
So, you
know, it's like I don't know. I mean, it's like it was just so dumb. I mean, the little Jimmy thing I can get because it's part of a storyline, and Duggan, and I guess like somebody had this idea of tying up loose ends, and that was one of them. But you know, my God.
Yeah, he's grown up now.
Oh yeah.
So, AJ was right. That's my conclusion. Then we had Brodus Clay being Jack Swagger, and they very much played up that Swagger is just a complete failure in every way. We had Dude Love out there with Brodus, and he danced. And that was Mick Foley's only appearance here on the show, was him dancing as Dude Love. So
not even one promo.
Nope, not even a promo.
I mean, a lot of the guys, I mean, you know, we knew it was going to happen. Is a lot of these guys, I mean, you know, that, you know, just a quick glimpse of them. It's kind of like, wow. It's a lot of work.
They had a lot of stuff to do here.
For you know, very little airtime. Dude Love put the Mr. Socko on Jack Swagger. So he not only lost in 15 seconds, but he also took Mr. Socko. So, yes, his bad streak is continuing.
If you remember many, many, many years ago, there was a segment with Triple H and Trish where he was trying to get her to stretch, and she's bent over and he's right behind her, and Stephanie walked in and Triple H gave the uh-oh face, and they wanted to recreate that here in 2012, but it's PG, kind of. So instead, Hunter was the one bent over as Trish was trying to teach him some yoga. And she was right behind him. I guess they figured that DDP behind Triple H would be just way too over the top. So Trish did it, and then DX walked in, and they were appalled. And then when they left, I believe X-Pac hit on Trish. And
yeah, he did.
That was the end of it. We never found out if he scored.
We never found out, yeah, what happened.
Yeah.
But he was very awkwardly hitting on her.
And she was very distressed. So I don't know if there was like an angle from a long time ago that like I've completely forgotten about with X-Pac and Trish, but I'm sure it'll be posted on the board tomorrow.
I don't know. It doesn't ring a bell.
We had the AJ Daniel Bryan wedding. And first they announced that the Reverend would in fact be the real-life Reverend Slick. So he came down to the ring. A trailblazer, they called him. And he got in the ring and called out both. And Brian, of course, got his entrance music. And AJ got her wedding theme, came out in her dress. And I decided during this segment that Slick needs to preside over every wrestling wedding from here to eternity. He was awesome. He was great. So he asks them both the question. Brian gives a little speech, gives the ring to AJ, says yes. And Slick is about to ask AJ when she just starts blurting out yes before the question is even asked. And Brian is very happy, and Slick's like, well, that handles that. Let's just, and before he can wrap it up, AJ says, hold on a second.
The one thing you have to bring up is AJ and Brian, and especially AJ, could not stop laughing at Slick.
It was, who could have?
I mean, it was just like, I mean, they could not even I mean, it was just so funny watching, like, they could not keep the facade up at all because, I mean, he was just so completely wacky.
Yes.
And
it's awesome.
And she's just, and, you know, AJ especially, I mean, like, Daniel Bryan's kind of laughing, but she just couldn't help herself.
Yes. He was in his prime here. So she suddenly says no, or yes, but then says it's not what Brian thinks. She explains that somebody had made a proposal to her earlier in the day, and she had said yes to this person. And everyone is thinking, oh, my God, who proposed to AJ?
No, it's freaking Kane.
Who is she going to marry? And it turns out it's Vince McMahon's music hitting. And he comes out and he says, hold on a second. So I guess he did appear on the show again. He said, hold on. It's not the kind of proposal that you think. I made AJ a business proposal since we here at WWE think she's the hottest thing in the company right now. She is going to be the new general manager of Raw. And Brian is appalled, and AJ starts skipping around, and it is revealed at this point that she is wearing a very, very expensive, beautiful wedding dress with her lace-up tennis shoes underneath, which is actually an awesome thing. And she skips away, and I don't know. I was really into the wedding until the payoff. And then the payoff came, and I was like, hold on a second. What the hell's going on here? And so there you go.
There you go.
It was lame. So Vince made the arrangement today, which meant until this morning, she was still planning to marry Daniel Bryan.
You're now thinking way too much.
Exactly.
Really,
I am thinking.
You really should not have said that, because it's like the requirement for a wedding segment here is that it just happened the way it did. And you're not supposed to think that she was actually going to marry him until Vince, you know, like, made, you know, offered her
I
a
just
job.
Watched them eating vegan cupcakes together and being all happy. How did this get ruined by Vince McMahon offering the GM position?
Well, if you're taking it that seriously, the fact is that why should she not marry him then? That he didn't tell, Vince didn't say, like, I mean, as far as I know, that you can be GM, but you have to dump him. He just said you can be GM.
That's right.
So unless it was like one of those secret things, which maybe it was.
If you think I'm overthinking this, just wait till about an hour from now on this show.
Okay.
So Brian's flipping out in the ring, and out comes CM Punk, and he says, well, you know, I don't want to rub it in, but you, in fact, just got dumped at the altar.
I thought he was rubbing it in.
He was. He's turning heel.
He didn't want to rub it in. Then the next thing he does is rub it in. I mean,
he's turning heel. He's an asshole.
Yeah, well, he was an asshole by the end of the show, right?
Yeah, foreshadowing. Yeah, anyway, yeah. Daniel Bryan's very upset, and he's explaining that he is the best in the world. He said, Punk's the one that said, I'm the best in the world, and he was saying it to rub it in, and Daniel Bryan said, you're not even the best guy in this ring. And he said, he's not only the best in the world, he's the greatest WWE superstar of all time. Which, of course, I was
thinking Austin's coming out for sure.
Nope. The Rock.
The Rock came out, yes.
Rock came out, and they had some bantering back and forth, and Rock called him a hobbit and an oopaloopa, which I'm sure trended on Twitter at some point. And Rock then announced, out of nowhere, with no storyline and no build, that I have just been informed, he said.
It's so funny. It's like I'm coming back. I've been informed.
Yeah, been informed.
Like I showed up for this 1,000th run. They said, hey, by the way, you're getting a world title match at the Royal Rumble.
He got a fax, and it said, I am getting a title shot at whoever's champion at the Royal Rumble. And the reaction was so disappointing.
Everyone's confused. The Royal Rumble's in January. We're in the summer.
I think it might have meant something if, like, listen, I know that Rock, you know, he's got movies, he's a movie star, he's not going to put his life in danger in a goddamn Money in the Bank match, but if he would have, like, won the briefcase and then came out here and said, guess what, I'm cashing it in at the Royal Rumble against whoever's champion, at least you could go, well, that makes perfect storyline sense, how about that?
Well, I mean, I will say this, I think that you're right about one thing, and that is, like, these guys killed themselves to get a freaking briefcase, and he just, like, waltzes in and gets handed a title shot at the Royal Rumble. The one thing you got to say that's smart, though, is finally they figured out
the Rock
that
has come back.
The Rock, they need to use him at the Royal Rumble and WrestleMania, where it's going to pay off. Instead of, I mean, I heard people like talking about, like, oh, you know, maybe Rock's going to wrestle at SummerSlam, which, I mean, it wouldn't have been the worst thing in the world last year, but this year, it, you know, the idea of putting Brock Lesnar and The Rock on the same show, I mean, you're risking not even being profitable with those payoffs. But as far as, you know, on the Royal Rumble show, you know, I mean, The Rock on the Royal Rumble show, they should, you know, he should increase business, especially since it's almost a, you know, if he doesn't win the championship at the Royal Rumble, then they're fools anyway. So, and I don't think they're fools. So, I think that, you know, that'll be, I think that's going to be the biggest Royal Rumble in a long time. And, you know, and then leading to Mania. It looks like, I mean, it looks like Rock over maybe Punk. Although, God, the problem with that is like, it's almost like too long for Punk to keep the title. Although
nonsense.
He did just turn heel.
He just turned heel.
Crew of opponents.
Yeah, you got a brand new group of guys that he can feud with for another 7 months. But
who
all
are they
I'm,
besides John Cena?
All I'm saying.
Who are they besides John Cena? Kofi Kingston?
I'm sure they've got to have some. Randy Orton, he's going to be coming back as a babyface.
I've seen that.
Well, you'll see it again with the roles reversed.
I guess Sheamus.
Yeah. You know, they got baby faces. All I'm saying is
Green
that
Mysterio.
If anybody is sitting backstage right now in WWE and going, man, Rock announced he's going to be fighting for the title and no one cared. I don't get it. Well, it's because your writing sucks. That's why.
I think that people just had no idea what to make of it.
That's the point. Like, what is it with Rock?
I don't think it was like a thing of like, boy, this is something we're not excited about. It's like, I think it just came out of the blue and people didn't even know what to take of it.
Exactly. What is it with The Rock? Where last year at Survivor Series, they set up a match for him to wrestle, and the best they can come up with is, my friends on Twitter wanted me to have a match and team with John Cena, which is preposterous.
At least here, from the day after WrestleMania, he talked about wanting to come back and win the championship. So,
you know, yeah, but
you know, the thing is, though, it's like, I guess because they were rushing through everything, and, you know, Rock really didn't get to do a promo whatsoever at all. I mean, he got to do a little bit of banter with Daniel Bryan, which was just, you know, to do his two or three catchphrases. But perhaps this would have worked better if Rock would have explained his reasons of, like, why he wants to win this championship. Maybe.
Oh, Dave, come on now. That's pro wrestling. They can't even come up with a reason for him to get a title shot. You're looking for him to explain why he wants the belt?
Well, at least he could say, like, there's some reason he wants the belt. I mean, you know, it shouldn't be that hard for him to come up with one.
Well,
I mean, you know, just like midlife crisis.
That'd be a good one.
Well, I mean, it actually would be a terrible one, but it's the
I think
first
that'd
one
be great. I'm going to get a young wife and a new car, and I want that title.
I want to win the title because I'm 40, and I know if I don't win it this year, I'm never getting it again.
Well, that's not entirely
That's why
true.
I'm coming back.
He gave Brian the rock bottom as well.
Yeah. No, but I mean, you know, just say like there's some reason, you know, of you know, why, like, winning it for whatever number this would be. God only knows, the 10th time or 8th time or whatever the number is. I think they said he's been 7-time WWE champion. And I know he held, you know, whatever it was, the WCW title once or twice. So whatever the number is. But, I mean, it's like, I don't know. But I don't even know the significance of that because it's not like Cena doesn't, I don't know. I don't know what it was. But he needed to come up with a reason.
I would like to say, though, that Daniel Bryan,
maybe he could say that it will increase the prestige of the championship by having a movie star hold the title instead of the frickin' Miz.
Well, luckily the Miz hasn't been champion for a long time. Hopefully everyone's forgotten.
And after the short order Cook has the championship, that The Rock being champion, at least when The Rock goes to a baseball game, people will go, there's the champ, like when Ric Flair and Hogan used to go places, instead of CM Punk and he walks around and nobody knows who the hell he is. And they go, he's the WWE champion?
I like the midlife crisis better, personally.
Well, there's got to be anything. But they did nothing other than just say, he's getting a shot at the Royal Rumble.
I will say that
which is fine. I mean, if I was booking it, that's exactly what I would do. I'd Rock win the title at the Royal Rumble and have him lose to Cena at WrestleMania, and then everybody's happy.
Daniel Bryan.
Well, except the people who don't like Cena. Then they're going to be really mad.
Yes. Now, Daniel Bryan, I want to talk about him for a second here. I did think that despite the fact that he was belittled in this segment, I thought that he did a great job at least attempting to put over the idea that he was going to stand up for himself and not just be walked all over by The Rock.
I agreed. I thought he was very good.
He was very, very good.
He's an excellent performer in every aspect.
Every single way.
Yes, absolutely. Facials, everything. Just a great, great job. I just hope that, you know, they don't have Charlie Sheen humiliate him at SummerSlam. But
well, they're going to say, hey, you're going to be in the ring with Charlie Sheen.
Yeah.
That'll get you over. And it may. Hey, listen, if I were Charlie Sheen and I had to have a wrestling match with anybody, I'd choose Daniel Bryan.
I know I would.
So we had Bret Hart come out to introduce the Intercontinental title match. It was Miz versus Christian.
Yeah. I tell you what, like, this is the thing that I do have to say, like, as far as, like with Mick Foley and Bret Hart. And I guess there's only 3 hours and 15 minutes that you can go, but, you know, some of the guys, in fact, even Rock, I really thought a lot of these guys could have been, I don't know. I was kind of hoping that they would be used better. I mean, Bret Hart was never, like, my favorite ring announcer anyway.
Really?
No.
So they had a match, and Miz, in fact, beat Christian and won the Intercontinental title here on Raw. And he was so happy.
Why not? They had to make it newsworthy.
Then we had the Triple H Brock Lesnar deal. So Hunter comes out and he wants to fight at SummerSlam. He didn't mention the commercial's already been shot. That would have been a good addition. But Paul came out and essentially said the answer was no. And so Hunter threatened to go backstage and get Brock. And Heyman said, if you do that, that'll be your third lawsuit that will be filed against you and WWE. Of course, the first two that they've done absolutely nothing with, so I don't know why we should even pretend to care. But Hunter called Brock a coward. Lesnar said, that's the best you can come up with.
Heyman. Lesnar wasn't
Heyman.
Out yet.
I'm sorry, Heyman. It's the best you can come up with is calling Lesnar names. I hope you don't teach your children to do that.
Don't you talk about my children.
That's exactly what happened.
Oh, my God.
So Heyman kept talking about his children, and so who should
about his
come
own
out?
Children.
Hmm?
Heyman was talking about his own children. Wouldn't want his children to call people names.
Well, I know, but he's saying, are you teaching your children that? So he was talking about Hunter's children.
Yeah.
Anyway, he kept talking about the children, and so who should come out but not Vince to defend his grandchildren, but Stephanie, the mother of these children. And she comes out.
She had to be on the show.
Yeah.
Really. She had to be on the show.
So she comes out and she slaps Paul, which I guess would be the third lawsuit if they were keeping track of these things.
Well, she was beating him up, so I mean, I don't think the slap was the worst part of it.
Yeah, she beat him up after a while. But anyway, she talked about how he was a failure in WCW, ECW, WWE. Said that.
I'll tell you what, I got to say something about this. There is some, you know, the scripting of this segment. The stuff that Stephanie was saying to Heyman, man, there is some weird psychological shit going on. I mean, it was like,
you're surprised?
You know, the whole thing of, you can't hold a candle to my father. It's like, I think that there is like some, I mean, like, no, I don't even think. I mean, it was like, I never realized, like, there was some really weird, you know, I mean, like, there's some really weird resentment here of Heyman. I don't know if it's of the people, like, see Heyman as, like, some, like, creative genius more than Vince, and it really rankles either the writing team or Stephanie or whoever scripted. Because, I mean, the stuff she was saying, I mean, it just had nothing to do with anything that people would relate to. It was all about, you know, you're not in the league of my father. And it's like, this had nothing to do with your father. This is like an angle with Lesnar and Triple H. You know, isn't Vince versus Paul. So I just thought,
I think that Stephanie has had to hear for years.
Oh no. I mean, I know. That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. This is some weird psychological stuff. I mean, she
not that
you
weird.
You could tell when she was delivering these lines that she has been steaming at this guy for probably years, waiting to tell this guy off because she thinks that he is not in the league of her father and he is overrated, and all these people who think he's like some, you know, great whatever, that he's a failure. He's a failure, and that's why he's where he is. But it was just, the fact is, it was like, if it was like a segment where Paul was trying to take over the company, you know, I mean, that would be awesome. but it was like so out of context, and I just found it completely, absolutely fascinating to see like just whoever it was, like, you know, scripted it, and then certainly Stephanie relishing those lines. It was just something to see.
Yes, it was. So after she slapped him, he said, "Fine, it's on." Basically intimating that that he's so mad at Stephanie for cutting this promo on him and slapping him that he's going to unleash this monster on Triple H, who's going to kill the father of her children. So she went nuts on him, punch, slap, beating him up on the ground. Lesnar came out. She, of course, bailed and ended up with a big brawl. They went back and forth for a while. Hunter clotheslined him out of the ring, left him laying. Actually,
he didn't leave him laying.
Just kind of got up and walked to the back.
He didn't leave him laying. He got up and, you know, went to the back and everything. It was the physicality was very good between the two. I don't know that they can keep it up for 20 minutes, although I'm sure they'll have a very good match. But I thought, you know, as far as like the physical angle, it was really good.
Yeah, Stephanie doesn't like this guy.
I mean, it was like...
Never has, I don't think.
Yeah, it's funny because he always kisses up to her, you know what I mean?
Well...
But I mean, I'm sure...
That's because
like,
he's smart.
She probably sees it as he does, but...
She probably sees it as he is a parasite, which is exactly what she called him in this interview.
Yeah, and I would never call him a parasite.
Well, I wouldn't either, but I'm sure she thinks
that
he is.
I mean, at all, in this business, I mean, he's a mover, you know... Parasite's not the word, but I mean, I know to her, you know, I guess he is. Well, you know, I mean, they have certainly had their issues over the years, you know, especially when he was on the writing team, because, you know, Paul on the writing team, I mean, the deal, you know, is when Paul was on the writing team under Stephanie, you know, Paul was very, opinionated, very, you know, believe, you know, strong, you know, presented in his beliefs. And half of the writing team that was there just thought Paul was like a genius, and that was the half that all got fired. And the other half thought that Paul didn't, you know anything, that Paul was just getting in the way and didn't understand wrestling. And so it was just hilarious. I mean, I just remember some of the conversations I had with people when they got fired, and it was just like, it was either like, you know, Paul is the all-knowing, all, you know, like these people just swore by Paul. You know, and just thought, you know, the worst of Stephanie, the worst, like the worst boss ever. And then you had the ones who like, oh, Stephanie's a good boss, and Paul, he doesn't know anything about wrestling anyway. He thinks this, and this, and doesn't get wrestling. I always thought it's, you know, probably both sides were like way off, and Paul was more in the middle. I mean, he's a smart guy and everything, and you know, his. You know, you can view his track record any way you want. I've talked to everyone in wrestling, you know, of any level, and Paul's one of the smarter guys out there. Not that he's not fallible and all that, because he is, but you know, the idea that he's like not smart or doesn't get it is just like ridiculous. It really is. It's just completely ridiculous. But I'm not saying that, you know, he's perfect or anything like that, or and certainly, you know, if I mean, he can't help himself. I mean, if he's supposed to be part of a team, I mean, shit's going to happen. And she says, that's what it is. Shit's going to happen. I think that she just, you know, she remembers back all that shit that happened. I mean, it's just, there was something there, boy. That was something to see.
We had Heath Slater come out with Howard Finkel as ring announcer. And Slater said, I'm going to challenge anybody backstage, any of these legends, any of these returning superstars to a no DQ, no countout match. So the challenge was accepted by Lita. And she came out and said she'd brought protection, which was not what you think. It's actually the APA. And they came down.
I was thinking she was going to the Olympics. Did you hear about all about the Olympics and Ronda and everything?
Oh, no.
Oh, well.
When she was ranting and raving about swimming?
No, that was the last one. No.
There's no one.
I don't know if you know this, but at the Olympics, at the Olympic Village, okay, it's like...
a giant orgy.
I wouldn't go that far, but it's more than people think. It's a borderline giant orgy.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And they pass out, like, the whole thing is they pass out condoms to everyone. and you're not supposed to know any of this, but Rhonda, in fact, did sort of bring up that everyone should, you know, make sure to bring their condoms to the Olympic Village in London, because, yes, that's what it is, a giant orgy.
Well, that's not what Lita brought. She brought the APA, and Slater tried to bail. All of the legends that he'd been wrestling in past weeks, Vader, Sid, etc., came out and threw him back into the ring. Lita hit the twist of fate. Bradshaw killed him with a clothesline, sent him ass over tea kettle. Lita gave him the moonsault. 1, 2, 3. And then Farouk said, damn, and that was that. There you go. It was fun. It was wacky.
It was fun. You know, I wish that it just felt like that when I was thinking about the whole thing and the guys they brought in, it's like, I don't know, they always bring the same, you know, the same, like, the Duggins and the Slaughters, they're always in, you know what I mean? And Roddy Piper. Kind of wish that there was, like, some new guys out there.
Some new, like, old guys?
I guess Layfield is new. You know, he hasn't been on TV since he retired.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of old, hey, here's a new one for you, Sean Mooney.
Yeah, that's true. I hadn't seen Sean Mooney on WWE television in, 15 years?
I had heard like a year ago that they rehired him. And
remember, didn't they rehire him for like a couple weeks and then never used him?
I thought he was doing something for the network or something, and that certainly
is. He ain't doing anything for the network yet.
No. Anyway, he interviewed Daniel Bryan, and Bryan's irate and frothing at the mouth about Charlie Sheen, and he said, if I saw him, I'd put him in the yes lock. And later they interviewed Charlie for another Skype segment, and he explained that Daniel Bryan knows where to find me. I'm in Los Angeles. Anytime he's in the area, we can do it in the ring or wherever. And of course, Lawler was quick to point out, my God, SummerSlam is in Los Angeles.
Cool.
So it looks like Charlie Sheen and Daniel Bryan will be having some sort of confrontation at SummerSlam in LA. So there you go. Cena, Zach, and Gene are backstage. They did some goofy comedy. Zach claimed Gene was behind GTV, and then Rock showed up.
But Gene explained that was impossible because he was working for the other company at the time.
Yes. Well, he didn't exactly say that. He just said I wasn't working here, but yes. So Rock shows up, and he says, good luck, Cena. If you win, it's you and me at Royal Rumble for the title. And Cena says, great. I'd love another shot to go one-on-one with the Great One. And Rock said, I cannot tell you how much I'm looking forward to that. So that was that. We had Kane come out. And earlier I'd asked the question. So Monday morning, AJ was still going to marry Daniel Bryan. But after being offered this job, this all changed. So Kane comes down to the ring.
Well, you know what? It's really lucky that on Daniel Bryan's part that, you know, that happened, because, I mean, you wouldn't want to marry someone and then, like, they get offered a job and then they just like, hey, let's ditch the marriage. I got offered a job.
That's right.
Especially general manager of Raw, which is like a notoriously short-term job.
That's right. No Johnny on the show, by the way.
What?
No Johnny.
He hasn't been on any shows. Other
than everyone?
What?
Other than every show?
Every show. You know what? He's probably in the dark match again.
I don't think he was, actually. I don't know if they did a dark match after the show. They just did some comedy banter.
Okay, well, he'll be at the dark match tomorrow night.
That's true. So anyway, Kane comes out, and who should interrupt but Jinder Mahal, Curt Hawkins, Tyler Rex, Unico Camacho, and way out there in the background, Drew McIntyre. And they claim that since, for 999 episodes, they claimed, we have not gotten a fair shake. And I thought, have any of you been here for 90 episodes? But they got
Drew,
in the ring.
Drew's been around for a while.
I guess he has, sure. So they got in the ring, and thank God that The Undertaker just happened to be here at Raw, and they just happened to have his music queued up so he could come out and save his brother. Which he did in the absolute slowest manner possible. I always love when Undertaker does a run-in to save somebody, because all these guys are in the ring with Kane, and The Undertaker's music hit, and so they very politely exit the ring, and they stand at ringside while this dude takes 10 minutes to walk down to the ring, attempt to take off his hood, which apparently is hard when you've shaved your head and have just a mohawk, and then the lights come up. So that's what happens. They all wait out there, and he finally gets in the ring, takes his hood off, and then they leap in the ring, and the brothers beat them all up. Double choke slams, double tombstones, which I swear to God got a "this is awesome" chant.
And it wasn't all that awesome.
It was two dudes hitting moves, and they stood next to each other.
I'll tell you what, Undertaker physically did not look good.
Oh no,
it was like since WrestleMania, it's like he's aged like 8 to 10 years.
Well, I think what happened was I think we'd both heard that his return, meaning like when he's going to come back and set up Mania, was going to be around Survivor Series, and I know that for weeks now, I'd heard they want Undertaker at Raw 1000. They want Undertaker. I think that this was kind of like more of a last-minute deal than a lot of guys.
Yeah, he wasn't. He
had no time to get into shape.
Yeah, I mean, but he just looked. He just looked old, though.
Well, yeah, he's put on 20 pounds, 25 pounds.
But his upper body was smaller. I mean, it wasn't even shape. He had like old man. He had an old man upper body.
I will bet when he comes back for WrestleMania, he has a different body.
I bet you're right.
And I'll bet he looks younger than he did here.
Yeah. He's also lost a lot of height.
He did. He was much shorter than Kane.
Yeah, and he used to be taller than Kane.
Yeah.
I mean, because Kane, Kane has the stuff in his boots and everything, but, I mean, I've met Kane a couple of times, and he's tall, but he's not as tall as you think.
Mm-hmm.
And Undertaker's pretty tall, but not anymore, I guess. I mean, Undertaker looked... Because if Kane's 6'7", Undertaker would be 6'6". And I think Undertaker used to be 6'8".
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you take all that, all that abuse, it'll do it to you.
We had a Twitter poll where they asked, who would you like to see Rock fight at Royal Rumble for the title? And the options were John Cena, CM Punk, or the current number 3 babyface, The Big Show.
Not a babyface.
Apparently. Well, I guess babyface is the top three
stars. I don't know why Big Show would be there. I mean, other than, I guess they just wanted him in the poll. That's all.
10% of the vote for the Big Show.
Yeah, well, no surprise.
Actually, there's a big surprise. 10% of people wanted to see Big Show title versus Rock at Rumble. It's baffling. So anyway,
look, 25% of the people didn't want to see... Actually, they were the smart ones. What am I talking about? Didn't want to see Lawler and Cola the other week.
There you go. So Punk and Rock was the crowd favorite.
Well, good, because that's the one that's the one it looks like they're going to do.
Yeah. Cena and Punk, they played up that no man had ever attempted to cash in Money in the Bank and failed. And by the way, I'm sure they'll play it up big next week, but when the show ended, even when the DQ occurred, when Big Show ran in and attacked John Cena, I mean, they really didn't make a big deal out of this rather historic event that someone failed.
I tell you what, to me, if you're gonna like not win Money in the Bank, you really should get pinned. I mean, idea that you win by DQ.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like really weak.
They had a match. And the ref took a bump, and Big Show came out and speared Cena. And Punk's in the ring, and Show...
He knocked him out, too.
Hmm?
He speared him and knocked him
out. Well, I'm getting to that part. Punk's sitting in the corner, and Big Show is setting him up for the knockout punch. And the story was, Punk could have tried to save John Cena like a good babyface champion. But instead, he was his title's on the line. So he thought about it, and he just sat there. And so Show knocked him out, and now Punk was really confused because, man, that's not fair. But, hey, championship match. Let me think about this. What should I do? He's all conflicted. Throws the referee into the ring and finally jumps on top for the cover, and John Cena kicks out. So he's like, ah, damn it. So he goes for the GTS, and Cena ends up slipping behind and puts him in the STF, and who should run back in but the Big Show? And he wallops John Cena, and CM Punk ends up winning via disqualification. The streak of Money in the Bank winners cashing in successfully is over. They make absolutely nothing of it. So Punk, after winning via DQ, he stands there just watching as the Big Show beats up CM Punk. And finally, he starts to turn his back to leave, and Rock is running down the aisle, and he runs past CM Punk, and he jumps in the ring, and he gives Show a spine buster, sets up for the people's elbow, and as he's bouncing off the ropes, Punk leaps into the ring and lays him out with a clothesline. And it's kind of funny because, like, everyone hates, I shouldn't say everybody, but a sizable percentage of the crowd hates John Cena, and a sizable percentage of the crowd hated The Rock during that build-up to the match with John Cena. And here you go. CM Punk beats up both of them, and they did such a good job. I guess CM Punk did such a good job in his role that, in fact, everybody booed CM Punk as he left. And
I would have thought it, because he stopped the people from seeing the people's elbow.
I guess so, but
I mean,
like,
that was the whole thing. I mean, I thought the key to that segment was that he was doing the people's elbow when he got attacked, because they all came to see nostalgia, and like the big climax of the show was going to be that people's elbow, and Punk stole it from him. So I thought that was, you know, kind of brilliant, actually.
Well, I mean, whatever they did,
you're gonna do a turn. I mean, you know, it's. You know, a lot of people like Punk, so you got to do that turn the right way, or else, you know, it may not work. But you know, it was the perfect way to do it.
It was awesome. Whatever they did, they did it great. And yeah. I mean,
that segment, that thing of you know, I would almost guarantee that Pat Patterson was the guy who laid out not the entire final segment, but the idea behind that segment, because there was an angle here.
It was a significantly more complex storyline angle than we normally get from WWE. I don't want to say you really had to think, but like, it's very logical. You know, the guy had to make a decision, and he was conflicted, and he should have done the right thing, but he chose not to. And it, as you know, I talked about this yesterday, it plays into the storyline perfectly that here's this guy who is the champion. He's been the champion forever. They played up that tomorrow he breaks the Hulk Hogan 1991 and Bret Hart some other 1997 or whatever record for now he's the 16th longest reigning champion in history or something like that. But they're playing it up that he's the guy. But my God, he never headlines a pay-per-view. All people want to
about that, though. Maybe he can do that in next week's interview.
Well, I presume he will. But the point is, it all made perfect sense in the storyline.
Yeah.
He's got a gripe, a legitimate gripe. And they played it up great in the final angle here, and it was a great heel turn. And I guess we'll see what he says next week, but it'll probably be pretty good.
Yeah. Because the deal here in the 70s, Pat Patterson and Don Morocco were in a tag team, and I don't even remember who they were wrestling. But, you know, what ended up happening was somebody came out and was beating on Patterson, and Morocco was his partner, and Morocco, like, went to save and then stopped and then left. And there was so much heat, far more, because we all kind of knew Morocco was going to turn heel, but you figure he's going to turn on Patterson in the tag match. But instead, by not helping him, which was something that nobody had ever seen before, it got so much more heat than the usual just turn on the guy. And that's why I know Patterson probably was the, I don't know, but I would presume Patterson was the one there, because it's just, I don't know that I've seen that. I mean, it's been done a few times, but never as good as that one. And this was probably the best one I've seen. And in some ways this was actually done, better, but the announcing was not as good as other times I've seen it. I mean, Lawler did bring it up, but it was almost like, you know, he came up with it late and didn't, you know, he mentioned it, but it wasn't, I don't know. The announcing was, I'll just say the announcing wasn't as good as I've seen in previous incarnations of that same angle.
Speaking of the announcing, we completely forgot to mention that Jim Ross returned.
Yeah, he got to do the six-man tag, wasn't humiliated, and then they got rid of him.
Yeah, he should have announced the goddamn main event
segment, now that I think about it.
That would have made this whole thing even better.
Yeah, because he probably would have been, yeah, no doubt. But,
And you know what?
I'll put it this way. The fact he wasn't humiliated, I consider, you know, to be as good as you're going to get. No matter what he did, at least, you know.
I got to say one thing that we've been talking for months, actually, about the fact that the first Raw 1000, the first three-hour Raw is going to be easy, but it's the week after that and the week after that and the week after that that are going to be tough. And in fact, the show is over and everybody watching this show, and I expect a lot of people to watch the main event of this show, everybody has a very compelling reason to tune in next Monday because you're going to get an answer as to why CM Punk did what he did. And hopefully they've got some ideas.
You had to do a good angle in the final segment. It had to be a big angle.
Mm-hmm.
You'd be foolish not to shoot your biggest angle, and this is the biggest angle. I it wasn't out of the box or anything. You know, I mean, I think you could sort of see the Punk turn coming anyway, but it's the one. So it looks like we got probably a Cena Punk rematch at SummerSlam, I'm guessing. Maybe a three-way with Show. Actually, good chance there's a three-way with Show.
I guess you could do, except that, I don't know, I guess you could do that, but it wasn't like Punk and Show had any issue. In fact, they were working together more than anything else, really.
Yeah, but he's in there, and what's Show going to do if he's not in that match?
Yeah.
And then Sheamus against, they're going to do God only knows what, but they're going to choose Sheamus' opponent for SummerSlam. At least right now the plan is to do that for tomorrow night's show. So, there you go.
All right, let's do some questions here, some of which relate to Raw. This person says, on Raw 1000, they showed highlights from the past, including the McMahon-Austin rivalry. In these clips of older Raws, the WWE...
I will mention, and I think that we mentioned this before, but the reason Austin wasn't there is because he was filming the movie Grown Ups, and he's not a big enough star to where he can just go, hey, I need the day off when he's in the middle of a movie. I mean, he's like the, you know... So, I mean, that was the gist of why he's not there.
All right. Anyway, it says in the clips of older Raws, the Scratch logo can be seen unblurred in the clear. Was a settlement recently reached with the WWF to where they can use the logo again for legacy content? If so, what about verbal usage? I suppose the new Undertaker DVD would be especially telling if you both don't know.
I don't know the answer to this.
Maybe they just...
I guess I could... Ask McDivitt. Okay, I'll do that.
Find out.
Yeah, might as well.
All right, 1997. By the way, this is not any sort of in-depth analysis or any sort of breaking news update or anything like that, but looking back at those clips of the Austin McMahon feud, that was, like, perfect. I know that's obvious, but just watching it back, even today, it's like you had the perfect... working man superhero. You had the perfect evil villain boss. They both were so goddamn great at their role. Like, I don't know if you could have had two other people anywhere ever in wrestling do this as well as these two guys.
Yeah, it'd be difficult.
They were just perfect. The whole thing was perfect.
They never should have shaken hands, though.
Well,
that's a huge mistake.
Another story entirely, but just looking back at it, it was just like, God, Vince was so good, and Austin was so good, and it was a perfect dynamic.
Oh,
and
yeah.
We'll never see something like that ever again as long as we live. I'm certain.
Hopefully we will.
Well, we may see something
God,
that's...
damn, I hate
Dave,
to think that that's the case. But
we'll
but
see
it's
something else.
I'll agree.
We'll see something else that's great and maybe awesome. Maybe it'll be just as big in a different way, but we'll never see anything like this again. I just don't think it's possible. I mean, really, Hunter against somebody in 15 years, I can't see it. No one's like Vince.
I can't either.
I mean, like what we talked about before, if you were going to make a movie about Vince McMahon's life, you could never find an actor that could do Vince McMahon. It's impossible.
They tried to get an actor to do Flair when they were going to do the movie on Flair's life. I thought that was going to be a complete disaster.
Well, that's impossible as well. There's certain guys, it's just like, the only person that could play them is themselves. Otherwise, it'll just never work.
Yeah.
And those are two of them. All right. In 1997 for the WWF, were the location... Oh, I see here. Poorly worded question. But basically, he's asking, was it planned to have a WWF show in Canada every other week, basically?
No. That was just complete luck. It was not like, okay, we're going to do this feud, and then we're going to book a bunch of... Because those dates were booked way before the idea of this feud. I mean, because they were booking dates like... you know, 18 months out, 12 to 18 months out. So it was absolute, just pure coincidence. It was amazing. And, you know, now they how often do they do, you know, Raws in Canada? I mean, very, very rare. So it's like, you know, yeah, that was quite the deal.
This person says, do you believe with Raw being 3 hours now, actually 3 hours, 15 minutes, that the pay-per-view buy rates will drop because Raws are now longer than pay-per-views?
I don't think that's going to... The pay-per-views are going to go up or down based on how well they build the pay-per-views. I don't think 3 hours... I don't think 3 hours is necessarily to your advantage, but I don't think that if... I think that if you build good pay-per-views, then that's not... It's not necessarily to your detriment. I mean, WCW pay-per-view numbers... I mean, they did end up going down when they hit three-hour show, but it's because it was a three-hour crappy show. If it's a three-hour crappy show, yeah. You know, it'll probably lead to buy rates going down.
But I don't think people, yeah, people
three hours good. If it's a 3 hour good show and you build good programs, you know, I mean, there's no reason the numbers can't go up.
Yeah, I don't see people. I mean, they're not paying for the fact that it's a 3 hour show. They're just paying for the fact that they want to see the matches on the show or the stars. What was the deal with the incident between Tully and JBL a few years back?
You know, Tully came in to be an agent, and he lasted about a week. And JBL, something must have happened when JBL was first breaking in Texas, where he encountered Tully, and JBL just told him off, or didn't like him, you know, and did the whole fake, you know, fake religion, and, you know, I see through you, and all that, and just Tully quit. So, you know, something must have happened in the past between the two of them, you know, when... You know, I mean, JBL broke in Texas, so, you know, was Tully working in Dallas? I don't even remember. But whatever it was, there was something in their past.
This person here says, what's your take on Triple H's comments about wanting to stay PG? Is that Vince talking, or is the man who became a megastar in the Attitude Era changed his ways?
It's the company directive. I mean, and he's an officer for the company. And, you know, hey, look, PG is neither the curse or the savior or anything like that of the business. It is what it is. You know, you can do great business with it. You know, I mean, yeah, you got a little bit of extra latitude without it. But at the same time, you know, you're not going to get sponsors. So, you know, it's a business decision, and this is the direction. You know, you give up a little in one way, but you gain more in the other way. And the bottom line is with Lindum running for Senate, and they don't have a prayer of doing what they did in 99. There is no way. She's having a hard enough time living this down. And don't kid yourself. I mean, like, you know, Vince is loaded and everything like that, but he spent $50 million on that thing 2 years ago. And he ain't that loaded. You know what I'm saying? I mean, he's loaded. Don't get me wrong. He's worth $300 million. But you know, they've already spent $8 million. And the campaign hasn't even gotten into, like, the strong point yet. So they're probably going to end up spending, God knows what, 15, 20, 25. They want to win real, real bad. And they go in there and they do some stupid shit on TV now. Come on, you know. I mean, kiss it goodbye. They're not that stupid. And that's why you're not going to see it. So, I mean, again, someday, you know, when things are different. But the thing is, you know,
Mae Young in the Hand wasn't PG. It's not the issue.
No. PG's never been the issue. I mean, it's like they did get away with, no, don't get me wrong, you know, like Austin stuff, they did get away with, you know, flipping people off and things like that where we really couldn't do that now. It never bothered me. That never bothered me watching the show. There were things that bothered me, but they were, you know, usually the things in that era that bothered me was not the stuff that was risque as much as the stuff that was just stupid. And they do plenty of that now, too. I mean, PG doesn't, you know, make you any less... You know, you can do stupid stuff with PG. You can have compelling characters with, you know, with this. I mean, yeah, there's some verbiage that Cena does, but I think that's more Cena than PG. You know, I don't think it's that big of an issue. And as far as Triple H, I mean, look, he's... What's he going to say? What do you expect him to
say? Well, you know what? I'll say this about Triple H. I don't have kids, but I've read many interviews from actors who they get a little older, they have a couple kids, And the next thing you know, they're doing children's movies. Because,
well, you know, I mean, like Road Dogg, as I recall, you know, when he was doing the DX stuff, he was hating doing it, and so is Sean after a while.
Yeah.
You know, because
you want
they,
something
they
that
kids,
your kids can watch.
You know, I mean, I know a lot of the guys in the late 90s that you know, and most of those guys had, you know, had young kids, and it was an issue with those guys, you know, as far as like, oh, my God. I mean, I know from some of the guys, it's like, geez, you know, kids want to watch Daddy on television, and it's like, God, do we want our kids watching this? But of course, the kids all watched. You know, I mean, more. Let's face it, more kids watch then than now by double the amount. But you know, that's. But still, it's like you're doing it. And you know, you're doing it. And you got qualms. Another thing that happens when you get older is you tend to think, you know, what works. I don't know. I just remember like that you know. You start thinking that it was your wrestling that got you over, even though it really probably wasn't. But that's what you start thinking when I've noticed that with like older guys. It's like, you know, they think that it's the match quality. It's like it's never the, you know, I'm not saying it's never the match quality. That's not fair. But it's boom periods aren't caused by match quality. I mean, it's nice to have it and all that, but that isn't what carried. That's not what carries the business.
All right, everybody, we're out of time for today, but we're going to be back. Actually, we got a lot of stuff coming up. Court Bauer is going to be on the show tomorrow. He wants to talk the 1,000th episode of Raw and a bunch of other stuff. So if you have questions for Court, post those on the board. And we've got some other special guests planned as well. All of the usual shows, Observer, Figure Four, lots of stuff coming up. So check out the front page, and we'll talk to you again after a while.